This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Is a thing. You're listening to The Kevin Kelly Show, exclusively here on placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. And now, here's your host, the voice of Ring of Honor, Mr. Kevin Kelly.
Here we know that Christmas will be green and bright, the sun to shine by day.
Merry Christmas! Happy New Year! Welcome, everybody, to the Kevin Kelly Show. It's episode 24. We've made it through the entire calendar year. And this is the one. This is the episode that we've all been waiting for. You found the Kevin Kelly Show here on the Place to Be Nation. The website, placetobenation.com. And whether you've ventured to us through the iTunes, doesn't matter how you found it, as long as you're here, because this is the one. This is the episode that everybody has been asking for. You know, when I said this is the one we've all been waiting for, man, if I had a dollar for every time I said that as a professional wrestling announcer over the last 23 years, I'd be a pretty rich man. But this is the one we've all been waiting for. Why? Because of our special guest tonight. Our special guest on this episode is Dennis Stamp.
He's booked. He's involved. He's here.
He is booked, baby. I love it.
He sniffed around the studios, and we let him in.
This was hard work. This was not an easy booking. A lot of times, I'm not going to lie. I got a lot of friends. It's pretty easy. You call them up or you ask them when you see them, hey, could you come on the show? Yeah, sure, no problem. We've had no cancellations. We've had one slight change with Mark Briscoe, who we'll get back on in 2015. DDP was kind of an exercise, but that's okay. But anyway, this was one that was like, how do we get this guy? How do we find him? Because we wanted to have Dennis Stamp on as a guest. Probably since like the first couple episodes, right?
I think it was literally one of the first couple that we first mentioned it. And Scott and I have been talking about trying to get him on some sort of podcast with Place to Be Nation for years now. I mean, he's been a cult favorite for all of us. So very excited tonight.
Yeah, this is good. And talking with Dennis, when I set up the interview with him Sunday night, man, he's an interesting character. That's for sure. And there's no one else like him in the world. I have run across a lot of people in my time. I've talked to a lot of great folks. Dennis is great. He's a fantastic guy. You're going to hear that this is going to be an interview like no other. I promise you this, fans. This is one they'll be talking about tomorrow. There's another cliche that I wish I had a dollar every time I said it. It's like going to the bank, you know?
As the Monsoon Classic Twitter account said, it's going to be a happening.
It's going to be a happening. Absolutely. At Fake Gorilla, thank you for your support on Twitter. And I want to thank everybody on Twitter that follows us, either me at Real Kevin Kelly or at Place to Be Nation, because the feedback and everything that we've been getting about the podcast throughout the year has just been really remarkable, and we thank you. We thank you, thank you, thank you for your support, for your tweets, for all the goodwill and wishes that you've sent our way. We've had a blast every step of the way. We're going to have a lot of fun tonight. We'll do the Dennis Stamp interview. We'll talk about some stuff. We'll do our trending stories like we usually do. We'll play a special game. We'll review what we didn't get Dan McGinn for Christmas, because JR, I can say pretty much it's unanimous. Neither of us got Dan anything, right?
I may get him a penis or something.
Well,
he's like Paris Hilton all of a sudden. He totes his dog around to all these parties, around these socialite of Marlboro.
The the sad thing is that the dog is more over than he is. Yeah.
Not as much of a bitch as Dan is, though.
Well, that's again, you've made two insulting comments about him, and all I've said is that his dog is much more popular than he is. That's it.
That's true.
Well, anyway, so let's not waste any more time. We'll get Dennis on the phone here in a second. While I'm dialing, JR, please tell everybody where they can find the Kevin Kelly Show.
Sure. Any of the following ways. PlaceToBeNation.com. You can click up the Kevin Kelly Show banner or the PTBN podcast banner on the right-hand side. You can subscribe to the Place to Be podcast feed in iTunes or visit Stitcher.com. Subscribe to the Place to Be podcast there. You can also download our unique app, Place to Be Nation Podcast. You go to placetobe.podbean.com/mobile on your iPhone and iPad, and it has all the episodes right there in a feed for you, nice and easy. You can also find a special ROH edition of the show on occasion at ROHWrestling.com. And as Kevin mentioned, you can follow us at Twitter, place2bnation, and at RealKevinKelly, facebook.com/placetobenation as well.
All right, fans, you've asked for it, and we have done it. The long-awaited interview here on the Place to Be Nation on the Kevin Kelly Show with Dennis Stamp. Dennis, it is great to talk to you here on the air. You have no idea how popular you are amongst the fans of this show.
Well, that is awfully, awfully nice to hear. I'm sure, for me, speechless is not a working term, but an introduction like that really, really gives me pause to think about it. I appreciate it. So,
well, it's so true. And again, you went from being, in many wrestling fans' eyes, you know, someone that a lot of folks didn't know because you were, you know, you had wrestled maybe 10 or 15 years or so before any of the younger fans had seen you, to now somebody because of Beyond the Mat, to where a lot of fans see you for the first time today, yesterday, the popularity of that movie and sort of the cult favorite that you became.
You know, that's a hard thing for me to believe that the movie has still got traction and people are still watching the movie
all the time.
Oh man.
We'll put it to you this way. When we announced that, cause you and I spoke on the phone Sunday night.
Sure.
So as soon as we made the announcement that Dennis Stamp was going to be on the show, we put it up on Twitter, and the response that we got, and I had told you, we've had everybody on the show from AJ Styles to Matt Hardy to Diamond Dallas Page to Dr. Tom Pritchard. We've had the announcer for the Boston Bruins. We've had all sorts of different folks, but we hadn't gotten more positive feedback than when we made the announcement about Dennis Stamp. And that is all because of that cameo appearance that you had in Beyond the Mat. How did that come to be? How did you find your way into that Barry Blaustein movie? Because I had a walkthrough. You saw my purple shirt in one of the scenes with Mick Foley backstage in a WWF event. So how did you come to wind up on in that famous documentary?
I've been accused of stealing the show. As a matter of fact, before the premiere, Terry Funk's wife was mad at me.
Really?
Yeah, because she said I stole Terry's segment. Now Terry and I couldn't be any closer. I mean, when he tells me he loves me and I tell him I love him, it's just like a couple. I mean, that's how close we are as far as how we feel about each other. There's not we don't see each other very often anymore, but the bond is unbreakable. I mean, it's just so strong and so positive that we can still tease each other, you know. And so he disclaims that. He says no, but he has come to find out that little set tee we had, the little talk with where I'm not booked and so forth that we had, really was a highlight of the movie, I think. And so he was a part of it. And so here's the thing. He called me up and he said, okay, Dennis, they're going to make a movie about, no, here's what he, here's how he approached me. Terry Funk called me and he said, Dennis, would you like to be in a good movie? That was a question he asked me. Would you like to be in a good movie? And I said, Terry, I'd probably like to be in a bad movie. Are you kidding me? I'd be in any movie. Give me a break here. So then he explained about the concept of Beyond the Mat. And that the producer was going to come to town and if it was all right, he'd like him to talk to me. If I would talk to him. I said, sure, Terry, what do you want me to say? He's taken aback by that. He says, oh, no, you say anything you want. You know, I was used to the wrestling format. Not that I ever had anybody tell me what to say, but they would generally, you know. But I thought, you know, here's a movie and here's what. And he said, no, say anything you want. So we went out and he said, where can we do it? So we went out to the Big Texan, which I don't know, it's a big steakhouse here on the edge of town where they have a 72-ounce steak and they have a rattlesnake and they have all kind of stuff, you know. So then he brought in a camera crew. They filmed what was, and I said this at the time, Terry Funk's first. I was the only one that put the first in there. Retirement match. And so they had all the crew in town. So they just did interviews. And so they had one of the producers interview me. And, you know, I really need to, I mean, I should be more modest than this, but I'm going to tell you the truth. When the producer, the woman that interviewed me, told me, she said that they had interviewed probably around 150 wrestlers, and that I was the best interview they had. She said, you were far and away the best interview of all the people we've interviewed. So, but they didn't use any of that. They didn't use any of that stuff that she did. All my best stuff was on the floor.
That's the way it always is, man. That's the way Hollywood gets you.
So the part, I was almost embarrassed by the part of the little conversation that Terry and I had about not being booked. And one of my daughters, my middle daughter, is an administrator of an American school in Korea. She is the administrator. She is the dean of academics. She's a big shot. And so she was teaching in, I don't know, where was she? Bulgaria at the time when the movie came out. And so they had all these international teachers watched it. And these are people with their master's degrees and mostly older people and academic, I call them anyway. They live in academia. They're a different world. Anyway, they told her that I was a drama queen from that movie. She said, oh, your father was just a drama queen. So I didn't really get critical acclaim by any means.
I would beg to differ from those. They probably missed the whole concept of the movie. They probably didn't understand it because probably professional wrestling and Beyond the Mat was being there in academia.
For the unwashed, that's entertainment for the unwashed masses.
Right.
So they have to keep up the pretense that they're above it, you know. If
sure.
anybody liked it, they wouldn't have dare said so because then they would have looked stupid to the rest.
And we we've always said, right, guys that have been around for a while always are like, and those are the people that go home and watch wrestling and don't tell anybody about it. They're the closet fans.
Yeah, I know.
Right.
I know.
Hey, how did you get to know Terry Funk? How did you guys become such close friends?
Well, when I got fired the second time in Los Angeles.
What year was that?
That would have been 1970. That was 1976, the second time I got fired.
Okay.
First time I got fired was 75. I wanted to be a heel. You know, I wrestled in high school and college, and I mean, I don't think that there was a better babyface than me, really. But in the regional territory system, you had to be a sacred cow. If you weren't a sacred cow, you were fourth or fifth on the babyface list. You know, you couldn't ever get anywhere near the top. So I wanted to be a heel because then you could work with all the sacred cows and. You know, so I came to, I wanted to go to Amarillo. The thing was, Amarillo was a territory where at the time, in the early 70s, by this time, Dory Sr. had passed away. But at one time, they said, you don't want to go to Amarillo as a babyface because you got the four Funks. You got Dory Sr., Dory Jr., Terry, and then Ricky Romero. So with only one town a night, you know, you didn't have much chance. So that's how I came to Amarillo, and this is where Terry, actually, he and his brother owned the territory at that time. And so I actually worked for them. But then I got a chance to Terry, that was the year that Terry was the world champion, the NWA champion.
Right.
Not a lot. But I got to wrestle him as world champion. I got to wrestle him 5 times as world champion. Okay, can I work? 3 of the matches we had were our draws. I'd say Broadway, but that's an inside term.
Right, we don't say inside terms on this show.
3 matches that we had with I did three hour matches with Terry as world champion. So, and I can tell you that those were, I mean, golly, it would have been like a 10-year-old kid at Six Flags over someplace, or Disney World for the first time. I mean, it was just like riding all the highest rides and the highest highs and the biggest thrills you could imagine. Can you imagine to think to be with the world champion, to be with the best in the world, and have him treat you like you're his absolute equal, and then make me even look better than he looked. When I walked out of the ring in Odessa, these girls followed me back to dressing room and said, "Terry Funk better never show his face in Odessa, Texas again after that beating you gave him." You know, so it was, yeah, Terry and I have a special bond. And see, that never goes away. That bond, that magic we created in the ring, is so special between he and I. It's a bond. In one of my stories I write about, I had a... I can preview it a little bit, I guess. I had a...
Well, you got to...
A bout with cancer a couple of years ago.
We're going to talk about... We got to talk about the fact that you've written a book, and okay. And that was one of the reasons why we wanted to have you on now, is to talk about the book. So this would be a good chance to do that. Now, what made you decide to write this book at this time?
Well, I've always considered myself a writer. I wrote 3 short stories 35 years ago, and they're all really good, and they're still good to this day. But they're fictional. They're fictionalized versions. They're fictionalized versions of professional wrestling, which is already a fictionalized version of wrestling. So you can't go there. It's where you can go, but they're still good stories. So I always knew I always thought I was a writer. So I wanted to write. Actually, I was so true to kayfabe, I couldn't vary from it. Until Vince came out to the New Jersey legislature and proclaimed professional wrestling to be wrestling entertainment. Once he did that, it kind of loosened me up a little bit. So the reason I wrote were stories, but they're true stories. And I wanted to give the reason. I'm a storyteller, basically. I'm a storyteller for sure. Absolutely, no question. That's one of the reasons I love being in the ring so much, because I was my story. I love both. Now, you can give me whatever you want in the ring, I'll take it and make a story out of it. But so I've always been a storyteller, or at least since I've been a wrestler anyway. I've been a storyteller, and I've been a wrestler since I was 13, so. I've been a storyteller all my life. But I wanted to give a little of the inside. I wanted to tell the story, some of these things that happened to me from the inside, and which I would have thought that wrestling fans would enjoy because they understand it better. But I thought that I could tell them in such a way that anyone would understand them and like them, you know. Now, I like them, but what am I going to say? they're my stories. I give you an example. It's funny. My brother and sister helped me with them because they're all really computer literate and they're typing and they do all these things and they're helping me out. And my brother had brought, I do some poems, which I might read you a couple of them here, but I do, but he had copies. He has all these copies and he's really a really good guy. And so organized. I'm not as organized as he is. So he takes one of the poems that he's going to make pick some mistakes on it, and he dog-eared one of the corners. I go, "What?" I screamed, "What are you doing?" He goes, "I thought this was my work copy." Oh, I said, "Oh, Tom, I'm sorry. I'm sorry." I said, "They're just like my babies. They're like my children."
Yeah.
These stories, and so I am absolutely proud of them, without question.
Well, the book is called The Stamp Collection, a collection of short stories from the world's most famous unknown wrestler.
now I'll give Chris due credit for that.
That's good. And I think it's a great eye-catching title, but the Stamp Collection, it is that collection of short stories. Now, and I just posted a link to where you can order the book on Amazon.com. I just posted that on Twitter, and we'll have that on the Place to Be Nation page as well, so fans can check that out and order one for themselves. Now, you mentioned that you've got some poetry that you've written.
Okay, let me just tell you one quick on the story.
Oh, now, tell me.
Everybody told me, you don't write short stories. You write one book. I said, the truest form of storytelling are short stories. I don't put in a lot of flowery descriptions of things. It's just the facts. It's all you need, you know. But probably I would say that, if anything, my stories have been influenced by my matches. You know, they have a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Right.
And it's funny because sometimes I would know how a story ended and then I would work to the end. But almost without exception, the story has a life of its own and it either goes in a different direction or it ends differently than what I thought it was going to start out with. But
which is kind of like a match.
Exactly.
Sometimes you think, you know where you want to get to, you know what you're supposed to get to. But the way you get there is kind of up to your interpretation and your opponents.
And what I would do is I just set my emotions on feel and on flow. Set my emotions on flow. Okay, if you make me mad, I'm going to be really mad.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a part of the match. It's a part of the match. And I'll go wherever it takes. You know, I'll go wherever the match takes me is where we'll go. And I might have never been there before. But likely I have, but sometimes I don't, you know. And I would never, I have maybe close to 2,000 matches, and there's going to be similarities all the way through, but I never had the same match twice, ever.
You told me the other night when we spoke on the phone that there's some matches and some occasions where you've seen posters or things like that, and you had absolutely no recollection of that match, of that opponent.
And I think part of that is, I was thinking about that too. And I think the thing about, you know, with baseball and others where all the statistics, where the wrestling, there's no yesterday. With professional wrestling, there's no yesterday. We got to forget yesterday because you already lost yesterday. It's a whole new world today. We got all the same players, but it's a whole new world. So we're starting all over. We're not going to say that that guy beat you 37 times in the last year and a half. We're not going to say that. So forget it. We don't go there.
Right.
Go forward. So that was sort of my mindset during that time of going forward. So if something didn't really strike me or it bored me worse, then it would be out of my mind. I would let it go. I didn't want to keep it. I didn't want to keep it in my mind. Mm-hmm. Now, some of the things I write about are matches. One of the matches, I can give you the actual date. I mean, it's dated from when it happened, and it was October 30th, 1976. So that's a long time ago. But I can go right through that match almost move for move.
And who was that match? Who was that match against?
Dory Funk Jr.
Ah.
But the special, what made it special at that time is Coco, eccentric, Bon Vivian, the man who planted the Cadillacs in the ground, this multi-millionaire, refereed the match.
Ah, so that made it.
Hunter. He was a big game hunter, and yeah, and so here's this guy. That time he's worth $60 million. So who knows? That might be $60 billion. But
yeah, $60 million in $60 million in 76. That was doing something back then.
And I know because they kept coming in the dressing room and telling me now don't touch the referee. Don't touch the referee, Stamp. Don't hurt him. You don't hurt him. You don't hit him. You don't touch him. You know, on and on. He's worth $60 million. You don't touch him. You don't get near him. So I was a little nervous. It made me a little nervous, but it was it turned out to be just an unbelievable match. And it's one of my stories. It's called The Match. It's one of the stories that I've written in. And what I wanted to do is I wanted to take people into the ring with me and go through the things that I was doing and why, you know, like I'd get hit and then I'd hit back and what I would do and how I reacted and why I was, you know, to try to take the people into the ring with me a little bit, because that's, I can tell you this, and I did put this on one of my, I've got poems recorded on CDs too. I've had two lifetimes. One inside the ring, and then the rest of the time. So that's how I feel about that.
Yeah. How did you? I was just going to ask the balance of those two lives. That's proven to be rather challenging for some of your brethren, for probably most of your brethren.
It hasn't been easy. It is not easy at all. And that's one of the things I can say that writing is therapeutic. People can do what they want. Probably most people would, I guess typewriters are passe now, but keyboards and computers, most people do it on computer, I would think. Me, I do it in a spiral notebook with a big pen.
Wow.
You know, but I write and I write and I write, and could write, I don't know, 2-3 pages in a day. And then I might go back and cross out half of it, or maybe tear up all of it. Try not to tear it up, though, because I like to keep it. Even though I have a tendency to try to throw them away, but I'll keep it. The spiral notebook makes it easier to keep it. Just turn the page. Just turn the page and start over, do something else, write over it. I've got so many things that are crossed out and rewritten and so forth. But believe me, you can get out of the ring, but you'll never get the roar of the crowd out of your ears. I mean, I'm no drug addict by any means. I try a lot of different stuff at different times, but there's no high in the world like a live audience. There's nothing that can touch it. And it's one reason why there's so many of the guys that go off into drugs and have problems. It's not just wrestlers. Look at football players. It's singers. It's anybody that performs in front of an audience. It's so hard to give up. And so... my storytelling, I thought, well, the one thing, you know, people always like my stories. Even when we used to make all the trips were by car, and we would almost always, it'd be 200-300 miles every day to drive somewhere, sometimes 200, 300 and back. And so we spent so much time together in the car, especially late at night. And I put everybody to sleep at one time or another with my stories. one of the things, and I say
that's
maybe,
good. That's good as long as one of those people isn't the driver.
Yeah, I always ended up driving. I would be the only person at 2 o'clock in the morning. I would be the one person that was still awake.
Yeah,
and I had everybody else put to sleep. But here, I tell you what, Kevin. I'll try this one time, this one thing here, if you don't mind, and we'll see what you think.
Okay.
What I've done, I've got some poems. I wrote some poems about wrestlers. Now, most of them are just short stories that rhyme, and they're basically stories. Anyway, this one is titled Hitman. I had his first match, the kid, Bret Hart. He may have been 15, too young to start. He was worried that I might tear him apart. His body to the hospital, we'd have to cart. I tried in the dressing room to settle him down. He said he was afraid he'd look like a clown. Funk told him, don't worry, Stamp's the best around. He'll make you look like the toast of the town. Little did I know, his future would be bright. The scrawny young kid in the ring that night. He sure didn't put up much of a fight. I said, come on, Brett, let's do this right. I told him, get down on one knee. Just make a fist and point it at me. There was one thing I didn't foresee. He threw it too low, if you know what I mean. He thought I'd be mad. I said, it's okay. You didn't know how to punch anyway. From your first match, no one could ever say that Bret Hart would be world champion one day. Dennis Stamp. The Stamp Collection.
That, Dennis, that is incredible. That is really, that's beautiful poetry. And what an amazing point of view you have being in there for Bret Hart's first match. I mean, that's incredible. Wow.
I got to say this one time because I've never said it before on any record. I got his cherry. Okay,
well,
go ahead.
No, I was going to say because the intersection between Bret Hart and Terry Funk we saw in Beyond the Mat, and if you didn't know the details,
okay. So then I got to give you the rest of it.
Okay,
so I have the match with I referee Terry's match with Bret Hart, which he knows the whole story. You know, he knows that he punched me. He punched me right between the legs. He knows that. And so we do one thing where he just pushes me. It's like two-hand push on my chest.
Mm-hmm.
It hurt for a week.
Damn, he was stiff.
I thought I wanted to have a match. I'm out there as a referee, and I just get shoved, and it hurt for a week. So I got to keep it in context. You know, I don't want people to think that. I think that I'm tougher than the hitman. The hitman is tougher than this old man. Still, I'm sure of that.
Well, from a 15-year-old kid having his first match with you to then being, you know, the world champion, what an amazing journey along the way. Now, when did you? So we know Bret Hart's first match, but when did you have your first match? How old were you? Where was it?
Well, it was Thunder Bay, Ontario. And it was August 9th, 1971. I was, Bern Gagne had started me, and when he started people at that time, they would referee and set up the ring, and then until it was time to have the first match, and he said, it's going to be way out somewhere in Thunder Bay, Ontario. But what a macho sounding place. Thunder Bay. Okay. This is one of my favorite poems, okay?
Okay.
It's called Andre. When I was a boy, I'd never believe that in my life a real giant I'd meet. He had a big head, big hands, and big feet. He had a huge heart. The man was real sweet. After the matches one Friday night, we'd gotten out early to our delight. Then Andre said, let's go eat a bite. When the giant said jump, We said, how high? After we ate, we went to the bar. That's when I should have got into my car. But it was too late. I didn't get far. The giant had picked me up off the floor. The table was soon filled with cans of beer. The giant then said, no one leaves here. Not until this whole table is clear. After that, you'll have nothing to fear. I drank too much beer. I passed out, you know. So up on the giant's shoulder I go. He carried me up to my room, I was told. Since then, only turkey. I take mine cold.
That's awesome.
How many people do you think have been carried up the stairs to their room over the shoulder of a giant?
There's probably like a veritable who's who in the wrestling business of guys that when you hear about Andre, you hear stories about him. It was always, you drink with me, boss. Come on, you drink with me. And it was, life was a party when Andre would come to the territory, wasn't it?
But you could not say no.
Right.
I asked Terry. Terry one time flew with him to Tokyo. So from San Francisco to Tokyo, you know, that's quite, I don't know, 8 hours, something like that, 10. So he said he wanted to watch a movie, Terry. For sure. So he carries around with him The Princess Bride.
Ah,
you know that movie he was in?
Oh yeah.
So he watched it, and it was over, and he says, "You want to watch it again?" So he played it again. So he went, it's over the second time. He says, "You want to watch another movie?" So he put it on again. He played the movie the whole trip from San Francisco to Tokyo. And I asked Terry, I said, "Terry, I said, I wasn't lying, was I? I said, you can't say no. You couldn't say no to the giant."
Yeah.
He says, no. He says, you couldn't. And I know you've been around him, and I asked Terry, and I've been around him. I was around him a lot. I have never heard of him ever bothering anybody, ever fighting anybody or hitting anybody or hurting anybody in any way. But you didn't say no to him.
Right. Exactly. I interviewed Tully Blanchard a few years ago, and Tully talked about flying on a plane with him. But it was like, you know, an early morning, 7 a.m. flight, and he's sitting across from Andre in first class, and he says, you drink with me, boss. And I was like, and it was like the last words he wanted to hear at 7 o'clock in the morning. Okay, you got it. So Bloody Mary, Bloody Mary, Bloody Mary before they even took off. And he doesn't remember the flight. He just remembers the beginning. Yeah. He says he was sure that there was probably some turbulence along the way, but he doesn't remember any of that. But that was the common theme. Nobody could say no to Andre. And yeah. he was just remarkable.
He would have a magnum of wine in the dressing room.
Golly.
Magnum.
And it'd
be gone before he left.
Exactly.
And no one ever said, not one promoter, not one person ever said one word to him about it. You know, there are always on people's ass about drinking and everything else.
Yeah, of course.
Not the giant. Nobody ever said anything to the giant.
So you had gotten fired two different times from working in L.A. How did you get fired? What did you do?
Okay, here's what happened. I went to L.A. with Louis Tellet, and we went in after the John Tolis, and people had just burned it down. They ran every other week, and they had $2,800. Can you imagine Los Angeles? $2,800 when we went in there. And jeez. So I worked my ass off. I would be in two and three matches on every night, every card, two and three interviews. We had two 90-minute live television shows. One was on the Spanish network, played all over the world. And I just got better and better. And we ran weekly instead of every other week. And it got up, I was one of the people there, who was up to 14,600.
Now,
from 2,800.
And for what fans...
14,000 a week.
That's amazing. What fans may not understand, when Dennis came in, that means the house, the paid attendance totaled $2,800. And he had gotten the paid attendance, now running biweekly, $2,800, to now running every week, got it over $14,000. That means a significant increase of attendance, because tickets were probably what, $2, $3?
No, they would be $5, $6, $7.
Okay, but still,
at that time,
we're not talking. We're not talking $20 tickets.
We're talking half a house. Almost. We're talking, that's a big Olympic auditorium. It was built for the 1932 Olympics. It's one of the best buildings I was ever in, because it was built perfectly for a ring in the middle.
Right.
It was built for boxing and wrestling. And it held 10,000 people. But anyway, Louis wanted me to be a stooge. I was assistant booker. And if there was a problem, I would fix it. If there was, you know, so Lee calls me and he says, I had you running the towns, but I didn't know anything that was going on. I said, Louis, what do you mean? You know, I knew what he meant. He said, I want to know every word that's said in the dressing room, because, you know, I'd say, this is what Louis wants, and they'd say, that asshole, you know, they wouldn't. You know how people are going to talk.
Right.
When the boss isn't there. It's only natural. So Leo Garibaldi had come in. Well, this is a stooge deluxe. and he would stand behind the door. We got to where we'd feed him stuff, because we'd stand behind the door. They were really on underage girls at that time. I was in my middle 20s, but I didn't mess with them anyway. But they're always around. Send the guys to humor them. So we'd feed them with that. We'd say, oh, yeah. Oh, is she 15? Dang, I thought she was only 14. I mean, it's almost like a comedy album we're doing. And
you
go back and tell Louis. So anyway, Garibaldi was hooked up with the Guerreros. Now we're in Los Angeles, right? And this is the middle 70s. Okay, and the Guerreros are all midgets. And I'm not. And I'm over like $1 million. The guy in the office said something about fan mail one time. And I said, fan mail? We get fan mail? He says, you're the only one that gets any fan mail. I go, why don't I get it? I said, what do you do with it? He said, we just throw it away.
Oh.
I said, why do you do that? I know why. They didn't want me to think that I was popular.
Right, because now you're going to ask for more money.
they threw mine at the fifth way. So anyway, they finally decided, this is one of my stories. I did this thing with Brian Gumbel. You must know Brian Gumbel.
Of course.
I did this thing with Brian Gumbel. That's one of my stories. That's one of my stories.
And he started his career in Los Angeles, right?
KNBC.
Yep.
And I did a segment with Brian Gumbel where he had his own segment. They had 90-minute news. They had 30 minutes of the national network news, and then they had their own 60-minute of local news. So he had time for segments. So he had a segment called Be What You Want to Be. So people could write in, and then somebody wanted to be a mayor. They found a little town where a guy was a mayor for a day. Somebody wanted to be a fireman. They get to ride on a truck or something. This was first class. Somebody wanted to be a baseball player. They took him out to Dodger Stadium and let him hit batting practice. And they'd film, you know. So somebody wanted to be a wrestler, right? So they come to the Olympic, and Mike LaBelle and Louis Tillet, and ask about it. And so, are there any volunteers? There's only one volunteer. There's only one person that would do it. And that's me. And so it's a guy sight unseen, 6'2", 250 pounds. And on my way to, and LaBelle's tell me, and Brian Gumbel said, you know, we don't want you to hurt him. Louis Tillet on my way to the ring, he says, I want a broken bone. You break an arm or a leg, I don't care.
Wow.
On my way to, and now there's nobody in the building except the camera crew, Brian Gumbel, and this guy's wife and 6-month-old baby are sitting at ringside. They're the only ones sitting in the seats. Now the wrestlers are all there, but they're hiding. They're all in hiding. So I had this guy, turned him every way but loose. I had him tap out or basically screamed out about three times. I would essentially pinned him two or three more times. I just played with him, you know, just dominated him. But everybody was pissed. Everybody was mad because I didn't break any bones, because I didn't take any blood, you know. So Louis wouldn't even speak to me. And the wrestlers were all on my back. I got the silent treatment, which only lasted, it lasted, they were going to do it for a couple of weeks. It lasted about 3 or 4 days. But they did, you know, I said, screw them. I did the right thing. I knew I did the right thing.
Sure.
Anyway, that got me fired. So, but that was the excuse to fire me. Because what good is a pistol if you can't shoot it?
Right.
If you can't shoot somebody with it, what good is it? So, as a pistol, as an office policeman, a pistol assistant booker, I'm not going to stooge. As a pistol, I'm not going to shoot anyone. What good am I? Yeah. Almost with a bad word slip in there.
Hey, that's okay. Again, this is on the internet. You can say whatever you want.
So, but I'm going to maintain my civility the best. And something might slip out, but I won't. I'm trying to keep it as clean as possible. But anyway, here's the deal. The Garibaldi was connected with the Four Guerreros, and that would have been Chavo, which Chavo, who would be in his 60s, and then his brothers. And so Mike LaBelle was the only one that was really honest with me, because he said, here's a problem, Dennis. He said, who are the fans going to, we're bringing in the Guerreros because we really want to cater to the Mexican audience. Because look, we're right here in Los Angeles. Hey, we brought it up with, I mean, we had it steady. No, I have to explain it. And he said, the problem is you're going to make the Guerreros look small.
Yeah.
So I was gone. And then next time I got Kaminsky. If you can believe this, I got fired in Vancouver by Gene Kaninsky, and Vancouver had to be the last outpost of the whole, you know, of civilization. It was so horrible. And, he wanted me to put over the guy. Okay, in 1964, there was a James Bond movie. I think it was Dr. No, one of the James Bond movies, where they had the little Japanese guy with had the derby with steel in the rim of the hat.
Right.
And he was old then. And so now here's 1975, and he's in his 60s. I'm in my 20s, and he wants me to put him over. So
he wanted you to put Odd Job over, huh?
Odd Job. So Odd Job, yeah, that's how I got fired in British Columbia. I said, he says, wait, why not? I said, he's old, he's small, and he's slow. I said, you got a bad attitude, kid. I said, you need to find some other place to work. All right, then.
I do know jobs for Odd Job. And then you left.
I did. Well, I did it, though. I mean, I did.
Oh,
it.
You did, but.
I did. I did it under protest, but I did it.
Sure.
I never didn't do a job.
Nah,
okay.
And go ahead. I don't mean to interrupt your flow, because you're doing great. We're again. We'll give everybody the opportunity to order the book, because I want to make sure everybody gets this. The stamp collection. You'll see the link on the Place Be Nation page. The stamp collection available now, Amazon.com and anywhere else you could find books. So
the gist of, actually, I just gave away one of my stories, because it's the one about Brian Gumbel. That pretty much is what that one's about. I think that I want to do one more poem.
Okay.
You okay? Okay. This one is Ode to Terry. For Terry Funk, they had a roast. The wrestlers came from coast to coast to see who could lay on the most and give it to our special host. He's tough as nails, but he's not mean. He carries himself with real esteem. His love of life is very keen. He brings joy to every scene. If you wrestled Terry, you would know he'd be the best match on the show. Getting to the ring, he may be slow, but once he's there, it's go, go, go. The matches with Charity are always great. Love him or hate him, but make no mistake. Such violence and mayhem he does create. To see him, leave early and don't be late. As a person, Terry has so much class. For that of a gentleman, he'd surely pass. To my dear friend Terry, I raise my glass in toasting a man that has kicked my ass.
That's beautiful, Dennis. That's really awesome. When I first got to meet Terry, oh gosh, I was in the WWE, and it was like 1998. So it was around the time of the, you know, Beyond the Mat, around that time frame. And
oh yeah, yeah.
He was still going strong then, and still is today. What you knew Dory so well, you knew Terry so well. And their father always had I would have loved to have met Senior, just because his reputation.
That's the one person in the world of wrestling that I would love to have met.
I know that because I've read a lot of the things that Dory Funk has written over the years, and I appreciate his writing ability a great deal. They talk
very
with such,
man.
Yeah, such reverence. They speak about their father. Of all the greats, and you had talked to me about this the other night, about kind of your Mount Rushmore of wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Go through that list for the listeners, because I think they'll appreciate your insight.
Okay. Well, and it's my perspective. And as I was thinking today about the people that I left off, I want to say that there are so many people inside the business that I have respect for and that I look up to and that I but my it's got to be my top five. My top five starts with, it's like the reason I'm the analogy is one day on the ESPN show they had the Mount Rushmore of wide receivers of the NFL, you know. So I thought what about the Mount Rushmore of professional wrestling? Some other local show had said that. So I thought, well, what would mine be? So I start out this way. I start with Andre the Giant. And he is the mountain, actually. There's nobody in my lifetime of 68 years, there's no one that compares to him physically. And I mean, Bill Watts or somebody came up with him being the eighth wonder of the world, and the longer I live, the more I believe that.
Right.
He was truly the eighth wonder of the world. So anyway, we started with the Giant. He's the mountain. On his right shoulder would have to be Hulk Hogan, because he is the most popular wrestler still to this day, period. You can ask anybody who know. People that don't even know anything about wrestling know who Hulk Hogan is. So he just transcends life. He is the wrestler. On the other shoulder, I have Dusty Rhodes. I consider him to be the most talented. Now, is he flawed? We're all flawed. But I consider Dusty Rhodes to be just an he was just too much. And then the other two on my mountain, then the other two would be Dory Funk Jr. and Terry Funk. I consider that I met two geniuses in the business, one being Dory Funk Jr., the other one being the late Eddie Graham. But Dory Funk Jr., far and away my idol. I idolized him. I still do. The things that he did when he was the world champion, which was prior to Terry, so it would have been the early 70s, like maybe 73, 74, and 75.
Yeah, he beat Kaniski. He beat Kaniski for the belt in Tampa, and then he lost it to Jack Briscoe.
Actually, he lost it to Harley. Harley changed the belt both times with both Funks.
Did he really? Okay, I'm sorry. I always had that. Oh, so Jack
Harley
never
lost.
Beat
Jack. Jack never. I don't think.
Oh, that's right.
Ever beat Dory Jr.
That's right. That's right. It was Harley Harley lost to both. Harley won the belt from both Dory
Funk.
And yeah, exactly.
Very
interesting. And, okay.
So I So, see, I know my history.
Yeah, you do. You know it better than me because you were there. You lived it. And
Kaniski
popped into my mind because he had fired you.
Kaniski is an idiot. So I like him. But I still, I mean, and another thing, he's a brother. I mean, it's a brotherhood. You're a brother. I mean, it's a brotherhood, and it's a tight, tight clique. And it doesn't matter. You could hate somebody's guts. If you could come in contact, personal contact with him, it's like, oh my God, it's like my greatest girlfriend from high school or something. When Terry and I get together, it's just my stomach, my sides will hurt afterwards because we laugh the whole time. I mean, it's just so special. But anyway, the thing about Dory. He made everybody look so good. When he was champion, he made everybody look so good. And the one I can tell you that just absolutely blew my mind was he did a 60 minute match with Grizzly Smith.
Oh my gosh.
The most uncoordinated person maybe I've ever seen in the ring. And he made him look like Tinkerbell virtually. And I've never forgot that match. I watched the whole thing. That's what I would do. I would watch all the matches. I would watch every match I could possibly watch. And I was on television all the time. I would watch all my matches when I could. And I hated it, but I did. I'd force myself to watch them because I wanted to see anything that didn't look right. I want to change. I want to fix anything. One of my friends was watching. We're sitting watching a match. And I was here in Amarillo, and he looks at me, and he looks at my shirt, and I'm just soaked under my arms. I'm just soaked. He goes, "You sweat more watching that match than you did wrestling that match." So, you know, so that I think that I consider myself fairly perceptive, so that I could I could. See things and figure things out. So I should be able to write about it. I should be able to tell stories. My problem telling stories orally generally is I'm too wordy and I go off on tangents and then never come back to the original story. So write them down.
You got a future as a podcast host then. Let me tell you, Dennis, because that's kind of the job. You start a story and you go off into left field and you don't come back. It's fine.
You know, the thing I want to give credit to Chris Duke. I want to give thanks to Chris Duke. Okay. It would have been, because I'll never forget, because when I saw the date on the broom in the hospital, it gave me a little bit of a chill because it was November 22nd. And that's the day when Kennedy was killed. So it was November 22nd that I go in the hospital with... 300, my pulse was 300.
Oh my gosh.
And I had fourth stage fast growing non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And I had tumors all over my body. Matter of fact, they'd assigned me hospice. They couldn't almost decide whether they wanted to mess with me or just write me off to hospice.
And what year was this?
It would have been 3 years ago, November 22nd. So
okay.
It was 2011.
Yep.
So, anyway, here I am. I'm still here. I'm still kicking. Anyway, so after that, and I can tell you that as bad as the cancer was, the chemotherapy was probably worse. But anyway, without the chemo, I wouldn't be here. So I have to thank the chemo for that, or thank them or whatever. And anyway, so I was this Chris Duke had a radio show, a wrestling radio show, in Glasgow, Scotland, on a little station. And so he had me on his show. I was on his show 20 weeks in a row, and he created a little segment called Stamp Stories. So he said, we can do 5 minutes. So after the first show, I'd gone about 10 and 12 and 15. And I said, Chris, we need to try to hold this to 10 minutes because I don't want to steal your show. Plus, I don't want to wear out my welcome. So I didn't tell any. I told stories every week, but none of the ones I've written. But I told a lot of my next foray into writing probably would be. Now, I've got fiction stories that I'd love to write, but nobody's going to pay any attention until I can establish myself as a writer. But I do want to write about my time in Las Vegas because I was the head jabroni for the AWA. And so I was in had about a 3-year run there where we were at the Showboat once a month. And I was there just about every time they had a show, I was there. And they would do this. They'd make 4 tapes, so they'd bring us in. Now, I'd love to do it. I get a plane ticket, supposedly a room. It might be 7 other guys might have the same room, and $150. So if you're on 1 tape, you get $150. If you're on 2, 3, 4 tapes, you still get $150. They say, well, we're only going to have you on 1 tape. Maybe sometimes we'll have you on 2. Well, I was never on less than 2, and it was usually 3 and sometimes 4. Several times it was 4, all 4 tapes. In fact, I can remember one time, and I don't know, I had Crusher Blackwell, and I had, I don't know, Zabisco, and I had different people, and they were just all wanting to squash me, so they were. And Crusher Blackwell, you know, 5'8", and like 500 pounds.
Yeah, right. Oh.
Pounds, and he's going to do a press slam. He said, but you won't feel it. Oh, my God. I was like a pancake. He really squashed me. But how could he not with all that weight? Anyway, so I'm back in the dressing room. That was my 3rd match. So I'm back in the dressing room, and I'm in the chair. I'm just sitting in a folding chair because I can't move. I should take a shower. You know, I want to go. I'm in Vegas. I want to do something, but I got to go home in the morning anyway. So, but I can't move. I'm just totally squashed. So Ray Stevens, the booker, or in that dressing room anyway, so he comes over to me and says, Dennis, you got to go on. You got to go on again. I said, Ray, I don't even know if I can stand up. He goes, you got to use somebody else. He said, look around, my friend. He and I were the only 2 people in the dressing room. I was the only one left. I was the only one left. And they had one more match they had to put on. So I said, okay. We'll see. So I went and put my head under the faucet and pushed my hair all back, which is all sweated and messed, and combed my hair back and put a jacket back on. So I barely could hardly just kind of amble along. But it's amazing. As soon as I got into view of the crowd, they started in with this heavy-duty booing me. Because, you know, I'm a villain. And they're just really on me, booing me. And my initial thought was, where have these people... Well, I didn't say people. I'll say people now. Where have these people been for the last 3 matches? How can they possibly boo me? I've been done nothing but been destroyed for 3 straight matches till they practically had to scrape me off the mat the last time, and they're booing me. But my initial thought was, how stupid are these people? But then what it did, though, the effect of it was, is like they were putting air in a flat tire. It just pumped me right back up. It just pumped me right back up till I got right back in the ring like I hadn't even been in there before. I mean, that night. So it's funny how it goes. And it was another time where I did all 4. There was one morning after that. That might have been that time. I had to virtually roll out of bed in the morning and crawl to the bathtub and put the water on as hot as I could possibly stand it, just to be able to move around.
Oh, boy.
You know, it's one thing when I was doing it every day, maybe I was wrestling 10 times a week, yeah, I could have done anything. But then when you don't do it every day, and then when you start doing it once a month, and then you had a few years off, and then you just go back to once a month, and then you can feel, then you feel the body slams and the press slams. I took 2 Superflies. Jimmy Snuka, I had wrestled Jimmy Snuka in 1975 in Portland and had taken the Superfly, and it was a dream. And then I'm booked with him, and 10 years later, I'm booked with him in Las Vegas to do this. He does the Superfly and almost killed me with it. My head hit the canvas so hard. all everything just started spinning around. And Vern was actually doing color commentating. He came in the ring. He came in the ring to make sure I was still alive, I think.
Jeez.
But see how I do with the tangents there. Anyway,
well, that's great, though. I think that those AWA tapings will make a great follow-up book. Dennis, we're just about out of time, but I do want to remind everybody that the stamp collection is now available at Amazon.com, and we'll post links, as we said, on the Place to Be Nation. I want to ask a favor. Before you go, the other night you shared with me a poem that was...
Well, yeah, I'm not booked?
Well, yeah, I mean... Okay. That's become your signature catchphrase. It's
right.
If you smell what the rock is cooking, or that's the bottom line because Stone Cold said so. I think one of the most oft-repeated phrases in professional wrestling since the late 90s has been, "I'm not booked." And you wrote a poem about that. And I would ask if you would share that as we wrap things up.
Well, I am. I will tell you that I would be more than proud to do it. And it's of my poems, it is absolutely my favorite. And so, and it's really it's the first one I wrote. And so that has some special feeling for it too. Okay. I'm not booked. I've been hooked and crooked and overlooked. I'm not fully cooked. I'm underbooked. I'm not booked. I'm not booked. Around the world I did look to find the one who took the belt that I forsook, but I'm not booked. The belt was mine to hold. The match had been ice cold. A proud territory had been sold. A championship had been stolen. And I know I'm not too old, but I'm not booked. A main event is a place to be. Anywhere on the card is okay with me. It's not that I'm the best, you see. It's just a match is what I need. But I'm not booked. In dressing rooms everywhere, you will see all the things that I won't be. A stooge, a snitch, or a referee. I would rather work for free, but I'm not booked, than a stamp collection.
There you go. That's about as good as it gets right there, my friend, and I'm glad we had a chance to get to know each other here on the telephone and here on the podcast. And I'm going to stay in contact with you if you don't mind. And we'd love to have you back sometime in the new year. I'm also
going
to
we can do some more poems.
I love it. I want more stories. I want more stuff. I feel we've just begun to scratch the surface. We're going to put you in contact too with the folks at Pro Wrestling Tees. So I have a feeling we'll be able to work out a deal there. And be on the lookout for that as well. You're very welcome. And, of course, the stamp collection is available now through Amazon.com. Follow the link. It'll be posted all over the Place to Be Nation website, all over our social media footprint. And Dennis Stamp?
I am really proud of those stories. I really am proud of those. I stand by those stories 100%. I think I'm sure if people want to hear me, they would want to read my stories for sure.
Well, absolutely great. And we thank you so much for your time. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to you. And we look forward to speaking to you again, okay?
Thank you very much.
All right. That's Dennis Stamp, everybody.
This is the King of Old School, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling, we talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week, that's right, the Steve Corino Show, every week, here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on PlaceToBeNation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcasts? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for the show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Bob. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
Alvin!
Okay!
So we're back here on the Kevin Kelly Show on the Place to Be Nation. The website, placetobenation.com. Do you think Twitter is all a Twitter now? Do you think everybody's talking about that one?
I'm all a Twitter.
Dennis Stamp was on fire.
He was great. He was great. It was a little bit of something for everyone. We had the poems. We had the traditional wrestler kind of exaggerated stories. And then we had some really cool wrestling history in there. You know, it was a little bit of everything. It was good.
We did.
And Dennis was right. He knows his history because he was there for so much of it, like you said. And it was cool hearing some of the stories he told about the territory days. And
right.
I love Dennis because he doesn't mind telling the stories and doesn't have to put himself over, if that makes sense. So, like,
right.
Talking about how he got fired and why he got fired with a good sense of humor. And that was really cool to hear.
And the one thing that I take away from that is when he talked about the two things, the brotherhood, which is real, that when you work in a wrestling company and you're part of a wrestling locker room, it's special. And there's really, and again, it's probably the same for other sports teams, but it's unique. A wrestling locker room is unique. And there's a brotherhood, there's a bond that you have with people. It's tighter with the boys than it is, say, with me and the boys, because the boys put their lives in each other's hands. Mm-hmm. So there's a different level of bond.
That's like you and catering.
See, now catering and I have always been on a first name basis,
right,
and that's one of the things we're hoping to bring to Ring of Honor in 2015.
Catering
is a little better catering footprint. But anyway, no, it's
I'm going to bring you a nice sandwich in Philly for you.
A nice sandwich. That's going to be fun. What a good weekend that's going to be. But anyway, so Stamp ruled. The other thing, of course, was the just the passion that he has for the Funk family and the love that he really has for them. And again, he's not the first person that has said that about Dorian Terry. Mm-hmm. People speak of them in reverence because they always made you feel like a part of the family. So great stuff from Dennis. Let's do just a couple of quick minutes on TLC because,
I want to get your take on the main event. The Ambrose, I don't know if you saw the show or you read about it or whatever, but the Ambrose Wyatt match, well, it was fine. It was a fine TLC match.
Yeah, I saw it. I didn't watch it in its entirety, but I saw
you
enough
saw the
of
finish.
It. Yeah. Yeah. First thing I thought of was Hogan with the photographer in 93.
But at least that was like subterfuge. This was just a guy jobbing to an electric wire. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It was boy, it's tough, and I'll put it in its context. There are some times where you want guys to steal the show and grab that brass ring, like Vince talked about. And then there's other times where the show has to follow kind of a flow, and if it doesn't, man, it can screw everything else up. Whoever decided to put the ladder on first really booked everyone else into a corner the whole rest.
Where else would
of the
you
night.
Put that match, though?
I would not have put it first.
I could put it last.
I wouldn't have put it first.
So let me ask you this, though. If you put it in the middle, isn't that even worse for the guys in the main event? Because it's closer together? It's more in your mind. I mean, sometimes by the main event, you kind of the opener is in the back of your mind by then.
It's tough. But then you had
gimmick match. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
If everything is a gimmick, then nothing is a gimmick. I always complained about the TNA format of having lockdown all in cage matches, because then what's the point?
Right.
If everyone is 7 foot, that was the thing, like Johnny Ace's philosophy, which Dr. Tom highlighted a few episodes
ago. If everyone has double D tits, then what's the point? They're all double D tits.
Right, exactly. You get my point there. Thank you, Johnny Ace, for chiming in.
Anytime, Kev.
If you don't have different shapes, different sizes, different matches, and you can't say, well, one was a ladder and one was stairs and one was chairs and one was... No, it's all the same. It's all the same, because you've got to give... If you've got... Eddie Graham said it. If you've got Funk and Briscoe on top, right, then you've got to book the midgets and the girls underneath, because you don't want anybody else to try to do wrestling like Funk and Briscoe. Nobody's going to be as good. So you got to gimmick up the undercard, because you know you're going to have a solid wrestling main event. When you've got all gimmick matches, man, you're going to burn the crowd out. And when you start with a ladder match like that, you're definitely going to burn the crowd out. And so no matter what you did for a finish, everybody was going to go, and they did. They like the guys, but they're still over
in trouble?
Stars. Who, WWE?
Yeah.
Where are
the stars?
Okay, I don't know. And I will tell you this, and the only thing I can relate to is when I was there. When Hogan turned at Bash at the Beach, there was a real feeling in the company that we were in a lot of trouble. And I highlighted this on your show when I was on. There was a feeling then that we were in a lot of trouble. And they started with the profit improvability meetings, and everybody was really nervous. And then there's no profit sharing this year, because there's no profits, because we're $5 million in the hole. And it wasn't, you know, corporate investors at that time. It was Vince and Linda.
Yeah.
$5 million in the hole. And where were the stars, and where were we going to get them? And oh my gosh. And everything did turn around. Everything was in the process of turning around. We just didn't see it. We saw Sean was a wreck. We saw Brett didn't want to be there. We didn't know who else was on the horizon. Everything turned out okay. But man, oh man, I wonder if the same feelings are going on today, because that's what I think. I think they're internally very fearful about some things.
I mean, I think the only difference is probably here. They're in bad shape in the sense that they have to cut more and slash more, but I don't think they're in any danger of like going out of business, right? Like, no. I think their models, but that was your reality in 96, you know?
Yeah,
I mean, there was a good chance you could go out of business.
It's a different worry, no doubt about it. And trust me, when you've got NXT, right, and you've got the future right there, and how long could the future be just the future until it becomes the now?
It's going to be soon, right? I mean, they need new stars, and they need it now. And I feel like Vince... You know, to borrow from sources, Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, right? Maybe they'll retire together. Who knows? I feel like Vince McMahon and John Cena needs to retire together in the next couple of years. And then you finally make that transition. And I think when you start bringing up this next crop of guys that could be stars, your Kevin Steen, you know, Devitt, Kent, all these guys that you're really banking on being your next group, it's counterproductive to not have the guy that's shepherding them in NXT. And, you know, I use shepherding in quotes because these guys are all really, you know, well off and great veterans. They're not, you know, kids. But the guy that's looking after them and caretaking is Triple H, right? He's the guy that's bringing them all in and letting them do what they're doing. And to me, if you don't have him in charge of them when they get to the next level, then you're just repeating the same stupid process they've been stuck in for a while now. So,
and I'll give you this. They have to change the process, and they have to streamline things, because I think in NXT, everything is a little bit more easy come, easy go. I think it's less structured. I think the guys have more freedom. Yeah. And because of that, you get a better product. It works.
Yeah.
Trust me, it works. Every business that's run with creative freedom is going to be better, because there are smart people in charge. Don't worry about that in NXT. But they pay the guys to do the job, and they go out and they do the job. So enough about that. We'll talk more about other stuff.
One quick second, because did you hear the Vince McMahon podcast? We haven't been on since that aired.
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I did not listen to it.
Well, you know, we're off for a few weeks now. We'll be back in January. Let's make that one of our topics, because I really want to hear your thoughts as an insider, that someone that knows Vince, that's been there. I really want to see your lie detector skills on this. You know, I want to know how much of it was complete BS, how much of it was legitimate, how much you feel was he was speaking the truth, stuff like that. So if we can do that for our next episode, if you can take that away as homework, I think it's archived on the network, and if you don't subscribe, we can help you watch it. So we should,
there you go.
I want you to check it out because I want to get your thoughts on it.
All right, I'll do that. I'll do that for the new year. But we'll talk more about things going on in our year in review segment a little bit later on. But we want to give a shout out to some of the great content that's on the Place to Be Nation website. And JR, like, we're kind of reviewing the year. We can barely review a week on the site, let alone an entire year, because there's so much great content. It's so rich, and there's so much depth to everything. There's nothing just throwaway on the Place to Be Nation.
No, so what I want to do is I want to highlight the kind of the generalities, like you said, kind of a year review type thing. So we have so many great podcast offerings here from wrestling and sports. You have our show here. It's on a hiatus now, but Steve Carino's show with our buddy Dan was really, really good, and that should hopefully be back in 2015. Sooner than later. We have the Originator, the Place to Be podcast. That's me and Scott Griscola. We do old pay-per-view reviews. We do live watches of network programming. We'll talk current product here and there. That's the flagship. PTBN's Main Event is every other week. It airs the same weeks that we record, Kev. And that's Scott. He leads a roundtable talking about the current day product. And they have really, really good discussions. A lot of laughs, a lot of fun. It's a good crew. A lot of guests will step in here and there. And the one that's up, they had one last week and one this week. And this week's is all about the Punk and Vince McMahon podcast. And it's a really, really good listen. I really urge everyone to go check it out. They'll also be doing a 2014, a full year in review. They're going to have Graham Koth on, the author of The History of WWE.com, will be on with them in January to do the year in review. So definitely check that out. A couple of sports podcasts, PTBN's Extra Point and PTBN's Sports Lounge. Both are really good, different views into the world of sports. Scott and Dr. G on the Extra Point, kind of your more standard talk radio kind of stuff, and then the Sports Lounge a little bit more. They'll dive more into the games and the numbers and the stats. And also a regular on the Sports Lounge is gonna be John Rook. He's the play-by-play guy for the Providence Friars, so a lot of Big East basketball talk on the Sports Lounge too. A few other wrestling shows I want to highlight quickly. Titans of Wrestling, they break down early 80s WWF shows. They go month by month. They go look at MSG and different other cities and towns and shows. So if you're into the old school, the 80s, early 80s wrestling, the Titans crew is a lot of fun to listen to. Where the Big Boys Play, Parv and Chad are going show by show through NWA, WCW, Supercards. Again, another must listen there. Those guys really know their stuff. Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham. Each and every week is a different theme, a different topic. He does like top lists. They look at ECW shows. They'll have other just random topics of debates. Another great, great show. So those are just some of the offerings we have here, PlayStationNation.com podcast-wise. Also, of course, a lot of regular running installments. We have our Seinfeld rewatch series. We're just starting season 4. This week. We've already watched all of the first 3 seasons, so that's been a real fun task. We love doing tournaments and polls. Right now we're in the middle of the Greatest Song of the 90s tournament. Round 1 finally wraps up tomorrow. We have 640 songs entered into this thing. So you go in there, you vote. PlayStation.com. Round 2 should be kicking off in the next week or so. Every month we do full pay-per-view reviews, as well as previews and reviews, as well as a reaction podcast that we record that night. So that's a lot of fun. We live blog each pay-per-view as well. You can get that at PlayStation.com if you go on during the show. So tons of cool stuff. We're always open for your suggestions for column ideas. We're always open for your suggestions if you want to join us to provide content for the site as well, if you're interested in writing. And I'd be remiss to mention, of course, the NBA team podcast with Andrew Reach and Adam Murray, another great show. Those guys really know their hoops. So if you're a big hoops fan, that's a must listen. It's one of my regular rotation pods. So plenty to love. We do a lot of comics coverage, too, our comic staff. I would rival with any other website that isn't just comics dedicated. And even those, I think we give a run for their money. Our crew is great. They do regular podcasts as well. We're going to have a year in review podcast from the comics world coming up. We have some really good movie reviewers and many other really great minds, especially when it comes to wrestling and sports. So PlacementNation.com. If you're doing any last-minute holiday shopping, if you go to the website, on the right-hand side, there's a banner for Amazon. You click that, it takes you right to Amazon, and you can do your order. You can do your shopping as normal. You don't need to do anything else, and that kicks back a little bit of money to us. So we really appreciate it if you take a minute to click through here before you go shopping on Amazon. Also, Kevin, just, I'll mention our sponsors really quick this week. Usually we go a little bit more in depth, but getridofcable.net. Check them out. That is obviously the future. It tells you all about tips on if you're ready to cut the cord, all your different options, Roku, Netflix, WWE Network, all the kind of things you can do if you want to break free of the stranglehold from the cable companies. And also Bonehead's Wing Bar as well in West Warwick, Rhode Island. Check it out, boneheadwings.com.
Great place for holidays, all your holiday celebrations there at Bonehead's. And thanks to getridofcable.net for all the love. We appreciate that as well. A quick shout out to my friends Josh and Jill as they celebrated and welcomed baby Piper into the world. Congratulations and love you guys. Look forward to seeing you again. Let's dive into now the trending stories, because we spent so much great time with our friend Dennis Stamp tonight. We don't want to take away from this the real highlight of the show. Every episode, every time we get together, we look at a unique, whether it's sports, whether it's real life, we pull it all together here. It's called Trending Stories, and it generally begins with trending story number one here on the Kevin Kelly Show.
And now, the news the whole world is talking about. It's time for Trending Stories right here on the Kevin Kelly Show.
All right, Kev, I think you know where we're headed with this one, I'm sure. U.S. officials believe the North Korean government was behind the computer hacking on Sony Pictures Entertainment, a massive security breach that embarrassed several executives and led to the cancellation of the planned Christmas release of The Interview with Seth Rogen and, James Franco. The officials told NBC News the hacking attack originated outside North Korea, but they believe the individuals behind it were acting on orders from the North Koreans. We have found linkage to the North Korean government, according to a U.S. government source. The officials offer no other further details. The interview is comedy starring Rogan and Franco, depicts a fictional assassination of Kim Jong-un. So word leaked earlier today and yesterday that some theaters were not going to do it because, of course, there was a terrorist threat that they were going to attack any theaters that were showing this. What was your initial thought? Did you think it was actually North Korea, or did you think it was some, fat ass in his basement taking a break from bitching about Daniel Bryan and doing this instead?
I don't know. Because here's the thing. If you read or hear anything about North Korea, it's this very primitive, almost third world country that's challenged for electricity. Like if you look at a global map, you could see how South Korea is well illuminated at night, but North Korea is completely dark. So how do they have the technology to do this when it is a third world country? I guess,
it's outsourced, it sounds like.
It's all outsourced, yeah. But... listen, Kim Jong-un is not to be trifled with. He is a bad man. Don't mess with him.
How do you think they're going to do? So do you think they have like sleeper cells in every city that's going to show this movie?
Well, I don't know about that. But again, couldn't they continue the hack attacks? Yeah. They're just hoping that this is going to go away. If you're going to do a spoof, you can't make it so direct.
Yeah. Yeah. They should have did a fake dictator.
Yeah, that's what they needed to do. And I'm trying to think of the movie that Peter Sellers was in. It was
Pink
in the
Panther?
No, it was around the same time, and it was made in the 60s. And it was very funny because it was a spoof on like the little country that goes to war with the United States. Mm-hmm. Only because they were a poor country, they were in debt and they wanted to be rebuilt.
Canadian Bacon?
No, it was not Canadian Bacon. That may have stolen the plot. But anyway, you make a fake country. You don't talk about North Korea.
Right.
You
have
don't
Borat
talk
do
about
it,
You just Borat. It's again a tragic situation. But Old Fart Oli said it best when he compared Seth Rogen to Jim Barnett. So enough about that. But let's roll on because trending stories never stop at one. In fact, now we move on to the second trending story right here on the Kevin Kelly Show.
Hey, Kev, Cards Against Humanity just won capitalism. The risque, irreverent party game for horrible people offered customers a very special deal on Black Friday. For just $6, they could get their hands on a limited edition box of bullshit. Eager to discover the truth of the box, a staggering 30,000 people coughed up the cash, and this week the goods have finally began arriving. Turns out they really do contain bullshit. Actual, real, honest-to-God bullshit. Two dozen jokes about boxes of crap, blah, blah, blah. There's video evidence of the turds that Cards Against Humanity is shipping to its customers. And there's videos of guys unboxing and seeing the actual shit in the box. They made about $6,000. They donated it to some of it to charity, it seems. What's your thoughts on this whole fiasco here?
Couple of thoughts. First of all, great musical choice there from Outkast. Well
done.
I'll
give credit to Dan McGinn there.
Excellent job, McGinn. Second of all, the working conditions in the bullshit factory have got to be just horrible. I wouldn't want to have OSHA in there at all. And hats off, kudos, salutations to the entrepreneur who made the decision to go in this route, because
the whole reason was to take a, pardon the pun, a dump on Back Friday. That was the all the ridiculousness.
Brilliant! It's brilliant. And which jokester is not going to want to give their pal a box of bullshit for Christmas? I think it's awesome.
What is the shittiest Christmas gift you ever got?
Oh gosh, my mom got me a couple of real doozy sweaters when I was in that. And she always says it's so tough to buy for you because, you know, when you get to be a teenager, no more games and toys. This is pre-video games, too, by the way, fellas. It was difficult for her to pick out what was right. And she had very little fashion sense. So, yeah, a couple of real gems went back day after Christmas. How about you?
I'm having a hard time thinking of it off the top of my head because usually people just ask, and I usually get what I, prefer.
When you're a kid and you got Santa Claus, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Right? But then once you get a little older and you're not on Santa's list anymore, it's like, dang, what am I going to do?
I'll say this. I can't remember a shitty one off the top of my head. I remember, like, the sad Christmas when Joe Malacone robbed all the people of their money in the banks here on Island, so it was like kind of a light Christmas, and we got like a movie and like a tape case to like hold our VHS tapes. And like we didn't get very much. I remember that kind of being felt a little sad that year. I have some good videos. The one year when there was this release of, because I was big into collecting the Hasbro figures for WWF, and there were ones came out I wasn't aware of yet, and my parents got me some, and I just, this video, I'm just like freaking out that I had like a friggin' Jim Neidhart figure, which is absurd when you think about
it. By the way, thank you, McGinn, as we delve back into the previous story. The Mouse That Roared was the name of that movie. Thank you. Well done.
The God
Kudos.
Failed. So anyway, that's more of, I guess, my recollection more so than anything crappy.
Were you ever sick on Christmas?
I don't think any of them that ever kept me from attending festivities. Nothing more than like, my usual yearly sinus infection or just a cold.
To me, that would be the worst, especially when you're a little kid. Nothing better in the world than Christmas with kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Always a lot of fun. So that's a good gift idea. There are more gift ideas. You can do the Amazon thing through placetobenation.com.
That's a must right there.
That's it right there. And you can get the stamp collection.
I did. Yes. I actually got in trouble with my mom the other day because, we were away for a week. And when you take that like mid-December vacation, it kind of screws up your whole flow into Christmas. And we didn't want to get a tree before we left because then I didn't want to have to have someone come water it every day. And when we got home really late Saturday night, like midnight or 12:30, we got to our house. And with an almost 3-year-old, obviously not just going to go lay down and go to bed. So that was a mess. So we were exhausted Sunday. I'm redoing the tile in my kitchen. So we just got a lot going on. I had, Christmas stuff tonight for work. And I just wasn't going to have time to get a tree. So we just decided for 1 year only, we're just not going to do a Christmas tree. And when I told my mom, I thought I felt like her heart breaking over text messaging. So she's babysitting for us on Friday, and she's like, I'm just going to go get you a tree on Friday, me and Dad. I'm like, you sure you don't have to do that? I'm like, get a small one, because I don't feel like decorating it. So I will have a tree. Christmas will live on. The Grinch has been defeated. But I was prepared just not to have a tree this year. Have you ever had a Christmas where you didn't have a tree?
My wife and I, when we first got married, we did not have the money for a Christmas tree. And I was a little bit scroogey, so it was easy for me to pass on this type of thing. But our friends surprised us, and there was a tree and some decorations outside of our apartment waiting for us one night when we both came home from work. So
it's like Tiny Tim.
It's a Christmas miracle.
Oh, we do the tiny's ironic. All right, you ready?
That's so not nice. All right, because the trending stories don't just live by themselves. They always come in packs of three. So now it's time for the third trending story here on the Kevin Kelly Show.
As Dan McGinn raises his hand, we move on to our third story. While Beyoncé's surprise album release last year has earned the singer incredible buzz and a number of Grammy nominations, it's also put her on track for a self-titled album to have landed her a possible lawsuit. Hungarian performer Monica Misura, or Mitsu, is suing Beyoncé, Jay-Z, and producer Timbaland for Drunk in Love in a suit filed on December 12th. Mitsu claims the track using her 1995 song, Bajba Bajba Palem, cutting and distorting the track for its inclusion in the Beyoncé track. She's asking a judge for the song to be prevented from airing so as long as what she claims is her voice is present. The song originally appeared in 2013. What's your favorite Beyoncé song, Kevin Kelly?
I don't have one, but kudos to you for pronouncing the title of the original track.
Bizbu, Bajba.
No, it's Bajba, Bajba, Bajba. Well done. You could have said anything, and I would so believe you.
Any thoughts on this lawsuit? You worried about it?
No, I'm not.
You think it's put a big dent? Are you worried about the royal couple, Jay-Z and Bey?
No. They are...
You worried about
their
kid?
I just...
How this might affect their fortune?
I always worry about kids in a divorce. That's never a good thing. I don't worry about their fortune.
You think they're going to get divorced?
Yeah. Don't you?
I don't know. Kind of want to hope they make it.
I don't spend a lot of time thinking about Hollywood or celebrities.
No, me neither. I do like Jay-Z, mainly because I like his music from the 90s. But
did anybody else watch The Voice?
No, you're alone.
My favorite part of The Voice, and I'll just tell the story really quickly, is the dynamic that exists between Adam Levine of Maroon 5 and Blake Shelton as coaches. Mm-hmm. There's two other coaches, and this time it was Pharrell and... the chick from No Doubt.
Gwen Stefani.
The cast was great. Singers were great. Comes down to the final four. And Blake Shelton has one singer in the final four, and Adam Levine had the other three. And my wife and I are like, wouldn't it be funny if Blake wins again? And sure enough, they start reading off fourth place, one of Adam's singers. Third place, one of Adam's singers. And that was the surprise. That was like, ooh, he might win. Comes down to the final two. Blake Shelton's country guy won. And we, like, popped.
You think does it hurt that show that it just pumps out just country winners every year? Or do you think country is such a big enough genre that...
The genre always works. Nobody that has won has been a slouch. And
Who are some names that have won?
I'm a big fan here. You're asking me to remember their names, and I can't.
Oh, well, you just said they're no slouches. I thought maybe they were like big names that we would know.
No. They're not slouches. They're talented. I don't think they've had the impact that like American Idol winners have had.
Okay. Well, that was my question more so. I don't know. I haven't watched either of those shows.
No Kelly Clarkson. There's no Carrie Underwood. There's no Jennifer Hudson. There's been none of those.
Clay Aiken.
Clay Aiken. But they've had all decent, talented singers who have done a good job. I don't think they've sold many records, though. But
There's a voice in, like, every country. Like, literally every country.
Yeah, it's a great syndicated vehicle. It works in every language. And in fact, in Hungary, there's probably a voice. And they're burning Jay-Z and Beyonce in effigy.
Afghanistan, Albania, Kosovo, Angola, Mozambique, Arab world, Argentina, Armenia, Australia, Azerbaijan, Belgium, Brazil, Bulgaria, Cambodia, Canada, Chile, China, Malaysia, Singapore, Colombia, Croatia, Czech Republic, Slovakia, Denmark, Finland, France, Georgia, Germany, Greece, Cyprus, Hungary, India, Indonesia, Ireland, Israel, Italy, Kazakhstan, Lithuania, Mexico, Netherlands, Norway, Pakistan, Peru, Philippines, Poland, Portugal, Romania, Russia, South Korea, Spain, Sweden, Switzerland, Thailand, Turkey, Ukraine, United Kingdom, United States, and Vietnam.
These are all the countries in which Dan McGinn cannot get laid in.
That was, I felt like Mark Wahlberg and Ted when he's naming all the chicks' names. But that was in Georgia, of course, Chad Campbell. They have their own voice down there, apparently. But there's that's how many countries have a voice show.
That's great.
It's nuts.
That is crazy. It's crazy, I tell you.
Everywhere,
it's crazy.
Those sons of bitches.
All right, so is that it for trending stories? Is there any more?
Well, it is Christmas, and you've been a good boy, Kev, this year. Oh. You made all your commitments. You were here for every show. You answered the bell, so I think you deserve a fourth story. How about that?
All right, so this is a special bonus holiday edition, trending stories, and I'll share this gift with all of you because these trending stories rule. Here it is right here on the Kevin Kelly Show.
Hey, Kev, we know all about bad boys and cops, but what about cows and cops? Police fatally shot a 1,000-pound cow Friday afternoon that had led them on a lengthy chase through the city's north side of Pocatello. The heifer eventually died after being shot by Pocatello police officer in the backyard of residents at Henderson and Jesse Clark Lane at 1:30 p.m. Police had shot the animal earlier in pursuit, but the wounded cow kept running. Pocatello Police Chief Scott Marchand said the two shots his officers took at the cow were fired because of the safety risk the animal posed. During the pursuit, the cow rammed into an animal control truck and two police cars in residential neighborhoods. The heifer also nearly caused motor vehicle accidents on Hawthorne Road and had run through a playground. Police felt the animal may trample someone as it charged through residential neighborhoods. Marchand said he's very thankful the pursuit ended with no injuries. The incident began at 12:40 p.m. at Anderson Custom Pack, a meat processing business. When an Anderson employee prepared to slaughter the cow, it jumped over the 6-foot fence and ran across Garrett Way and up Hawthorne Road.
Hell yeah.
Anderson employees dialed 911, and within minutes, the cow was being pursued by Pocatello police and animal control units. Police officers and witnesses said at one point, the cow was running up the middle of Hawthorne Road, nearly causing accidents. The cow eventually left Hawthorne and headed west, where it retreated to a resident's backyard on the road's south side. A police officer then shot the cow in the head, but instead of succumbing, the animal bolted past the police cars. I just pictured this cow being like fucking meth. And they were supposed to block its path out of the yard. With several police and animal control officers in pursuit on foot and vehicles, the cow emerged to Henderson Lane and headed north. Police and animal control officers spent the next several minutes chasing the cow on adjoining streets. They eventually cornered the cow in the backyard of a house, shot it in the head again, and this time it died instantly. Several residents emerged from their houses because of the gunshot sounds. Damage to police cars that were rammed by the cow during the chase was minimal. After the cow died, Anderson employees loaded it back into a truck and took it back to the meat processing plant. So there you go.
It's a circle of life.
And that state is Idaho. One of my favorite stories of the year right there. We're going to wrap on a strong one. The meth up cow
awesome.
That busted out of the friggin' meat processing. I love that they killed it and then trucked it back to the plant.
Yeah. So it tried to get away. But, you know, listen.
We go to Boneheads
this
week. That's the one we're going to be eating right there.
They're talking about police shootings nowadays. You know, I mean,
right.
Hands up, no hoof, no justice, no beef. I mean, come on, man. There is ready-made protest material right here. We've got to have some justice here for this poor cow who was just trying to get along, trying to move down the street. Wasn't selling Lucy's. Wasn't jacking up a cigar store. Was just trying to get along. It's just wrong. I love it. I absolutely love that. It's tremendous.
Oh, what a story.
What a story. What an epic saga.
And you don't usually get that good at writing on like those kind of stories. I love the way they built to the finish there. They really told a nice story.
I thought it was going to be, you know, cow gets shot, police shot the cow and what's up with the police shootings these cows. But then it continued, and the fact that he broke out from the meat processing plant. I mean, they are having t-shirts made of this cow.
It survived the gunshot to the head.
Kept rocking. I mean, that is awesome.
A true beast.
Cows lives matter. Yes, we can't forget that one. Every life counts. That's what it's all about. And all right, so that's trending stories. A very special holiday edition here. Let's take a quick timeout. We'll come back. We'll play a game. We'll do the year in review. We'll have some fun and laughs. It's the Kevin Kelly Show here on The Place to Be Nation. See him kick when Santa visits his paisans with Dominic. He'll be because the reindeer cannot climb the hills of Italy. Hey, jingity-jing. It's Dominic the Donkey.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week, join Marcus Vandenberg and myself for the world's most dangerous sports show and the program that's changing the game one show at a time, the Kings of Sport Podcast. available exclusively on PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the big four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on placetobenation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on PlaceToBeNation.com.
In Rhode Island, and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers, and a fully stocked bar. Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real Tough Show, every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really are a heel. You're as cuddly as a cat.
All right, we're back. You're here. It's the final segment of the year, the Kevin Mr. Kelly Show. It's 24 episodes in the books. Big plans for 2015. He doesn't know it, but Kerry Silken is going to be our guest on the first edition of the Kevin Kelly Show in 2015. I talked with Kerry at Final Battle. We'll have carry on schedule permitting, and we'll do that the first week of January as we take time off for the holiday.
Yeah, right, so Dan McGinn, the date quick on that will probably be the January 13th, 14th that week.
Oh, it'll be that late. Okay, so we'll bump it out to the 13th, 14th, and we'll do it around then. So that'll be
a 1 year anniversary show, I think, Kev.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy to think about how quickly that year has passed, but. Speaking of the year, it's been a great year, and I'm very thankful for you guys, for Justin for producing, and also for Dan McGinn, who joins us. Dan is the producer of the Steve Corino Show, which will be back and better than ever in 2015, but he joins us as a special guest here as we do a little year in review, and we'll play a quick game called Naughty or Nice. Dan, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you, Kevin. Thank you for taking me on this ride for the last year.
Well, just you wait. All right, so again, naughty or nice can go a couple of different ways. You could pick out somebody who's been naughty, somebody that's been nice. You could talk about something, someone or something. I don't know. JR, do you want to start with naughty or nice? What do you want to do?
I'll go naughty. A little naughty, naughty. My Jets. I've been naughty all season.
God.
Because even when they're supposed to suck, they fucking win and screw it up, right? So... They have been really bad this year, obviously. Now won their third game, which was stupid because they beat the team that was directly in front of them for a pick they badly need to take a quarterback. So just nothing going right this year for them. Looks like Rex is on his way out. Rumors that Idzik is 50-50 that he may go. So we're looking at a reboot again, which is fine. Do it now. Might as well. You're here.
Todd McShay's version one of the mock draft had Mariota 1 to Tampa and Tennessee 2 takes Jameis Winston.
And the Jets, yeah, the Jets taking my boy Amari Cooper. I call him my boy because on vacation, myself and the cowboy Roger Morissette, we were at the Disney World for a couple days, and one of the nights we went out onto downtown Disney, and it happened to be the night they were doing the Home Depot College Football Awards at one of the clubs right next door to the piano bar we went to. And got to see a bunch of guys walking around in suits, and we got our picture with Amari Cooper, wide receiver, one of the Heisman finalists from Alabama.
Well, there you go. That Cooper would be a great addition. He's a special player, no doubt, had a great year. And hopefully Florida State will win the national championship. But we'll know that when we record the first episode of the new year. It might be settled business as early as January 1st, but I'm hopeful. But we'll see what happens. All right, McGinn, this is your time to shine. Pick naughty or nice and go.
I'm going to go naughty, and I'm going to go in the same direction as Justin, just with one of my teams, that being the Boston Red Sox, how they completely butchered the John Lester situation. They kind of gave him a lowball offer during the beginning of last season after they had just won the World Series. They kind of ran with a comment that he made about taking a hometown discount and this, that, and the other thing, and then it was really awkward middle of the season. They weren't doing well. Next thing you know, they're trading him away, and then it's like, well, we might get him back. We're going to really try like mad to get him back, even though we're trading him away, and yada doo-da. And they make a trade. They get an outfielder that they only keep for a few months, and then next thing you know, they trade him away. John Lester does what every free agent in this situation does, a hot commodity, signs to the highest bidder, and he's probably in the situation that's best for him and his family. Meanwhile, the Red Sox are just piling up twos, threes, and fours to replace him. So just an awful situation. I'm sure that they'll still be competitive in that division, but you're really letting go of one of the cornerstone guys that was part of two World Series championships, and you're basically getting 50 cents on the dollar in return. So naughty goes to the Boston Red Sox.
I will give you the option to trade with me for just one day, because I'm a fan of the New York Mets. You want pain? You want naughty? Come on, Dan. You can't cry. I'll tell you this. What they did with Lester was kind of, because again, it's all out in public and it's very difficult to do that. I think they probably wound up making the best decision in the long-term interest of the club, because wouldn't they have gone over the luxury tax threshold if they would have re-signed Lester?
Oh, that team prints money.
Again, but okay, and the division,
give me a break.
The division is winnable, even without Lester. Because look at the losses that Baltimore has had.
Yeah.
The Yankees, if Tanaka comes back, okay, great. Other than that, they don't scare me. Tampa is a mess. Toronto, you never count on them. So the division is winnable if you're Boston with what you've got.
You could be a favorite if you get Lester back.
Well, then it's just like, yeah, okay, but Kansas City showed last year you don't have to be the on paper favorite.
Yeah, but is that, I mean, anomaly or the way to do things? I mean, yeah, let's see. Let's see it be done again.
Okay.
Did they just get hot?
The best thing that but they made one bad decision, I think, in signing Kung Fu Panda. I think they way overpaid for him.
That's why I like the Headley deal for the Yankees, because I feel like they got a guy that's, what, 75% of what Panda gives you for, you know, less than half the money?
See, yeah. I'm not as upset with the Panda deal as I am about the Hanley Ramirez deal. I mean, Ramirez is a guy that's already going to be playing out of position. If he did play in the infield, he's going to take a spot away from a young kid in Bogarts. Now he's going to play the outfield where he's never played before. And we're going to expect him now at this stage in the game to still be the dominant player he was when he was in Florida. And oh, by the way, he had an attitude problem when he was playing in Florida. So I don't know. It's kind of penny wise, pound foolish, if you ask me. I think Panda is a proven winner, and who knows if he's going to keep the same production going, but Hanley Ramirez is going to be playing out of position. He's pushing aside guys who probably should be playing in the outfield instead. I don't like that move as much either.
We'll see what happens. But again, trade you any day you want, Dan, if you want to be a Mets fan.
But you always have that. You always have it 1986 to throw in my face if you want.
That's true. 1986, dribbler
up the line. Ball gets behind Buckner. The Mets win. Mets win. It was our one day in the sun in 86. Then we came back and won 9-4 in the final. That was another day in the sun. We had two sunny days there. I'll go nice just to break it up, because nice to me has been the fans this year. I wrote a little something on the ROH website, and you know, and I've kind of echoed this sentiment here throughout the year. This is the most fun that I've ever had. And this show is a big part of it. It really is. And it's just been nice to hear from so many fans that have enjoyed, whether it's the commentary that Steve and I have done on Ring of Honor or the podcast or both, just the feedback that I've gotten and everything. It's been a year of positivity in my life, and I'm better now than I was at the beginning of the year. And we talked about, you know, kind of on this whole journey of sort of finishing strong in life. And I think that has, if you look at just one year at a time, we started off in one place and we've finished strong all the way through. And I'm very proud of what we've done here on the show. Very proud of Justin. Very proud of Dan. Very proud of the Place to Be Nation. All the fans and everybody that supported me, supported the site, supported the show, supported Ring of Honor. It's just been a blast. So we're looking to build on this for next year.
And we mentioned before, I mean, it's you finish strong thing is too. We hit every episode. We didn't miss one. Which I think is big, considering your schedule, my schedule, what we got going on. We had a guest for every episode. We only repeated once, and that was with Dr. Tom, and he was gracious enough to pop in last minute, you know, a couple weeks ago. So I think that's been part of it too, you know.
I agree, and again, it's easy when I got, you know, a lot of good friends who are great at what they do, and they can come on and put their lives on hold for a little bit of time. And we always say, just 20 minutes. And then it turns into like 45 minutes to an hour.
Yeah.
And Bobby Cruz was the only one who was like, I got a lot of things to say. How much time do I have? You know, you want to go an hour, Bobby? Sure. You know, 70 minutes later, we had Bobby Cruz, who was awesome. But the whole archive of everything lives on Place to Be Nation on the website. So make sure you go back and, you know, while I'm trying to trudge through the Vince McMahon bullshit fest podcast that he did with Stone Cold, oy vey, do me a favor and go back and listen to the archives of the old shows and tell me what you think. So I think we've gotten better each time too, which is really good, you know.
Oh yeah, I think so.
Very excited about that. All right, give me one quick thought. Dan, I'll go to you first. One quick thought, a sentence or two that kind of puts a summation on the wrestling year for you as a fan. Where do you think things are? Just a couple of quick sentences, go.
Just up and down. There's certainly lots to be thankful for as far as the in-ring abilities of people go. And shows are entertaining. They're not all five-star classics. Maybe some of the creative you can maybe kind of point at as being a little bit inconsistent. But all in all, you know, a lot of access, a lot of opportunities, and you know, a lot of things out there to watch. It's great for a wrestling fan.
Absolutely. No better time than now, that's for sure. All right, JR, this is your time. Give me some thoughts here on this year as a wrestling fan. You've got a real good grasp on the big picture, plus you never forgot your fan roots, so I'm interested in your perspective.
Two words for me to sum up this year of wrestling. Missed opportunity. I feel like there were so many opportunities for so many cool things, specifically from WWE, that they completely just whiffed on. And they continue to whiff on. And what makes it frustrating is it's still fixable, and they can't figure out how to fix it. And that makes it way more frustrating as a wrestling fan. This is, without a doubt, the least I paid attention to current WWE programming, and probably in my life. You know, the last 2 weeks I haven't even watched Raw, because between football, you know, I was away. And I didn't care to even go back and rewatch. I just check out Dan's review at PlayStation.com and get my fill and check out the message boards and the chats. Yes. And everything else. And you know, I'll watch the pay-per-views because I get the network, and you know, that's still a must-watch for me pretty much, and NXT. But as far as the main program, Raw, SmackDown, I don't watch a lot of it, and I think it's because it's not, you know, it's not can't miss. It's can miss at this point. You can miss it and not miss much. I miss maybe a great match here and there. Okay. But it's a match I've probably seen a bunch of times, or I'll see again, or at the very least I can go back and watch it when I want. I feel like the network was a big missed opportunity. For as good as it is and as much fun it is, and I'm not going to cancel, I'm going to keep it because I watch it almost every day in one way or the other. They finally show on prime times and TNTs, and I think they're starting to get it. But again, it could have been so much more out of the gate, and they whiffed on that. Even stuff that was not in their control, you know, two things come to mind that were just missed opportunities. One, Daniel Bryan. Finally, they bite the bullet, they ascend, they give him his huge WrestleMania moment. Looks like we're headed for a fun title reign. They stick him with Kane, and then the news breaks. He ends up missing the whole entire year, being injured. And who even knows if he's even come back at all? If, you know, I don't think he'll even be back for Mania, but or again in his career. Another one too, completely out of their control. Nothing they could do, but still a disappointment and a sad moment was the passing of the Ultimate Warrior. This guy finally comes back, you know, has his big moment, goes into the Hall of Fame, shows up on Raw, and then he dies the next day. That whole thing is still so mind-blowing to me, how it happened, that the night after he was on Raw, he passed away. It's just, I still can't even come to grips with how that all played out. And again, nothing out of their control. It felt like to me, and I want to know if you guys agree, the cool wrestling run ended at WrestleMania, and I feel like everything since then has been a fucking train wreck. Like, the network is really cool for that first month. The Warrior came back. Daniel Bryan. And then since Mania, it's just been this one slow downhill reverse climb.
I'll kind of put my thoughts on this as well, because you've really hit upon something there. Missed opportunities, I would completely agree with you. Look at what they did. They ended the Undertaker streak.
Yeah, that too.
With Brock Lesnar. And they made Brock Lesnar's ascension to the top. And he could have had that transformative run at the title, but they couldn't get away from John Cena. And the more that they, one, humanized Brock Lesnar, made him vulnerable, and two, kept him away, they've rendered him useless. They have rendered him useless, and I think that this is just Vince's way of getting back at Brock, because he probably went to Brock and said, I need you to renegotiate your deal. Brock said no, and Vince said, okay, pal, and parked him at home. So, but I think the time for change is coming with them. I think they've got to really look at what they do. We highlighted this a little earlier on. And as far as Ring of Honor goes, because I'm there, I can speak to it. This has been a remarkable year for the company. We never went, every time that we went back to a town that we had been to previously, the house was up from the last time. We talked about that earlier on with Dennis Stamp, and that's a big measuring stick in wrestling. It's based on paid attendance, and our paid attendance increased each time we went back to a town in 2014. Will the same thing happen in 2015? I don't know. We start January 3rd. We got Alberto El Patron in Nashville. It'll be good to finally meet Alberto, and we'll see what he does in Ring of Honor. We've got him.
Get him on the show.
That's a good idea.
It's a great idea.
I have to work
idea.
On that.
Full yes. of good ideas.
I'll definitely have to work on that. From all indications, he's eager to come in and show what he's got. So it's going to be very exciting. He's going to wrestle Christopher Daniels on the 3rd in Nashville.
Is he going to be in Philly, or do we not know that yet?
Is he going to be in Philly? I think so.
All right. Looking forward to that. Yeah. I've never been in the ECW arena, so I'm really excited to be there.
Yeah. What a good opportunity this was, because originally he's supposed to be at the National Guard Armory. Mm-hmm. And, because of the changes there, we had to move. And so now we're going to be at, the old arena, which is the new arena. Mm-hmm. On, you know, it's a historic building for wrestling fans, and I guess it doesn't look much like the original ECW arena. The people had said that it always, when I went there in like 2009, 2010, they're like, it looks totally different now. I was like, I kind of still see it. I guess there's been more renovations. It's really nice, and it's a great place to go. We'll have to go during the day down to Foreman Mills and pick up some pimp wear. It'll be, you know, make a strong showing that night.
Okay.
Fashion-wise. So that's kind of our thoughts here on the year in review and everything. Again, I said this earlier on. I just want to say thank you to everybody that has tuned in and listened, downloaded, and made the Kevin Kelly Show, this podcast, part of your routine, whether it's working out, whether it is driving in the car, or whether you're just sitting around
doing nothing, getting high, listening to us. That's cool, man. Whatever it is you want to do. I don't care. Set some goals for the new year. That's the one thing I'm working on right now is my list of goals for 2015. Mine is going to be financial and also some home repairs and a vacation goal that I have for my family. I think that's what I'm really going to focus on in 2015. So
another 24 episodes of this.
Another 24 episodes. I mean, yeah, that's a good goal. So set some goals for the new year. Write them down. And don't worry about the date. Make a date. But again, you can always write that date in pencil. Don't be too hard on yourself if you don't make that date. And don't consider yourself a failure for trying. Just move the date and achieve it. Just keep working towards that goal, whatever that might be. But focus on your goals and finish strong in the new year.
Quick, your one must-listen Kevin Kelly show from 2014. Dan?
Oh, man, why do you guys start with me?
Kevin?
Oh, gosh. Sean Grandy, I love that one.
Damn it, that was going to be my pick. All right, I'll go with My Girl Maria, which was a lot of fun. And Hanson, the most underrated one.
Hanson was very underrated. What a year for Hanson. Mm-hmm. What a year for Ray Rowe. What a year for Hanson. Wow. We had so many good guests. Somebody I'm really proud of, too, is Matt Hardy.
Yeah.
Who just is on fire and continues to
Matt Hardy. That's the one I was going to say.
There you go. Dan McGinn coming strong with Matt
Hardy. Dr. Tom, a lot of fun. Gangrel, too.
Absolutely. Had fun with everybody. And Dennis Stamp, I think we'll see where that ranks on the year end.
Yeah.
But we had 24 good ones this year, no doubt about it. And that's it. So for this edition of the Kevin Kelly Show, we bid you adieu. And because it is the holidays, we say Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. And we'll see you in 2015 right here on the Kevin Kelly Show on the Place to Be Nation website, placetobenation.com.
Happy Hanukkah, too.
A tree fell on Greg Abbott.
You know, I'm only 50 now and the phone could ring at any time.
Basically, because she had Tommy John and had a strong arm, she gave these awesome hand jobs that he was like obsessed with. Will you do my wife and I the honor of purchasing you?
Oh, wait a minute.
I don't get butt hurt.
Bye.
Choo-choo and rubber chomp-chomp. Curly hair dolls that toot-toot and